ప్రతిరుదేంద్రియ ప్రాణ మనోబుద్ధి ఉపారతం స్థానత్రయాత్ పరం ప్రాప్తం భ్రమభూతం అవిక్రియం. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities, and he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It appears that the Muni in his hermitage, the king entered, was in yogic trance. The transcendental position is attained by three processes, namely the processes of jnana, or theoretical knowledge of transcendence, the practice of the process of yoga, or factual realization of trance by manipulation of the physiological and psychological functions of the body, and the most approved process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of the senses in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita also we have the information of the gradual development of perception from matter to a living entity. Our material mind and body develop from the living entity, the soul, and being influenced by the three qualities of matter, we forget our real identity. The jnana process theoretically speculates about the reality of the soul, but bhakti yoga factually engages the spirit soul in activities. The perception of matter is transcended and still subtler states of the senses. The senses are transcended to the subtler mind, then to the breathing activities, and gradually to intelligence. Beyond the intelligence, the living soul is realized by the mechanical activities of the yoga system, or practice of meditation, restraining the senses, regulating the breathing system, and applying intelligence to rise to the transcendental position. This trance stops all material activities of the body. The king saw the Muni in that position. He also saw the Muni as follows. Today we are reading from Canto 1, Chapter 18, entitled Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmin Boy. Text number 26. We find Maharaj Parikshit roaming in the forest on an expedition. He became, by the arrangement of the Lord, overwhelmed with fatigue, hunger, and thirst. He approaches the hermitage of Samik Rishi. According to the Vedic culture, when a guest comes to your home, he is to be welcomed with affectionate hospitality. Even if that person is your worst enemy, if he comes to your home, he should forget he's your enemy. He should be treated with such respect, such affection. In fact, according to our Vedic scriptures, this is one of the most important principles of the Grihastha Ashram. How to welcome guests who come to your home, even the unexpected guests. According to our means, we should make them feel very happy, very comfortable, by giving them sitting place, water, food, sweet words. So, Maharaj Parikshit is the king of the entire planet Earth, descendant of the Pandavas. Such a personality comes to your home, he's to be treated very nicely. But Samyak Rishi was absorbed in yogic trance. It is described here what his condition of consciousness was. His sense organs, his breath, his mind, his intelligence were all completely restrained from material activities. And thus he was situated in samadhi. So he was not aware of anything going on around him in this world. He was so deeply absorbed within his own spiritual consciousness within. Now Maharaj Parikshit is a great soul. He's very humble, very gentle, simply performing his duty as a king, as a service to God and to all living beings. He had no false ego whatsoever. But in this particular situation, he was covered over by the Yogamaya potency of the Lord for a specific purpose. He was so overcome with hunger and so overcome with thirst, he asked Samyak Rishi, please give me some water at least. And Samyak Rishi ignored him. So Parikshit Maharaj, we're going to read in the future verses, how he makes a slight offense to Samyak Rishi, and he's going to be cursed to die. This was the plan of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Paramahamsa Samhita. It is the crest jewel of all Vedic literatures. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Thakur, whose disappearance day we celebrated yesterday, he said about Srimad Bhagavatam that if every single book of every single library in the entire planet Earth were destroyed, no trace of any of those literatures remaining, and the only book that survives is Srimad Bhagavatam, then there is absolutely nothing lost. Srimad Bhagavatam is Vedavyasa's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which describes the very essence of all knowledge, of all scriptures, for all living beings. So the Lord wanted to stage the Srimad Bhagavatam's being spoken in a very, very instructive way for everyone to understand. Parikshit Maharaj had 7 days to live. And therefore, with his entire heart, he went to the bank of the Ganges, inquiring from saintly persons, please speak to me the absolute truth. And the greatest of all the rishis appeared in the form of Shukadev Goswami. And Maharaj Parikshit, he didn't care. He didn't care anything about the temporary facilities of this world. He left his home, his wealth, his beautiful clothing, his position as king. He vowed to fast till death and absorb his consciousness exclusively in hearing the glories of Krishna. So this is the spirit we should approach the spiritual master. This is the spirit we should approach the Srimad Bhagavatam in the mood of Maharaj Parikshit. That we really have understood that there's nothing else in life worth living for except to awaken the love of God that is dormant within our heart. Here, Samyak Rishi is described as being totally absorbed in spiritual consciousness. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining the various approaches by which one can become absorbed in transcendence. There is the jnana process, which is to completely absorb one's mind and intelligence in the study of Veda. There is the yogic process, through manipulation and engages the engagement of the senses through the physiological and psychological functions of the body in a certain type of meditation and trance. But Prabhupada says the most approved process, which is the most effective and simplest, is bhakti. To engage the mind and the senses in the service of the Lord. It is only through bhakti that we can attain the highest platform of prema or love. The other process can give us various stages of realization of the absolute truth. But to understand the personality of Godhead and the awaken the original natural consciousness of the soul, it is only possible through devotional service. Devotional service is active. It is dynamic. Samyak Rishi was living in the forest, completely away from all the material civilization. The path of bhakti is so powerful, even while living in the very heart of a materialistic society, if we learn how to remember Krishna always and utilize our body, our mind, our words, and our life and all that we have in Krishna's service, then we're actually situated on the spiritual platform. Krishna will reveal himself in everything and everywhere to such a person. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was living in the holy land of Mayapur, and he did something that no other acharya ever did. Amongst Vaishnavas, the most condemned place in the whole planet, considered to be like hell, was Calcutta. That's the way the Babaji's and other sadhus would think. They would never go to Calcutta, maybe to get some money and then come right back. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he made his preaching base in Calcutta. He taught the principle of Rupa Goswami's Yukta Vairagya. Wherever there is the most conditioned souls, that's where I want to preach. In fact, at Sri Radha Kund in Brajbhumi, he understood that there were many Babajis there who were artificial renunciates. Taking the Paramhamsa dress and the Paramhamsa lifestyle in imitation of Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. But in their minds and in their actions, they were still addicted to so many sinful acts. But still, they were very, very much proud of being very renounced, very simple, only speaking the very, very high topics of Radha Krishna's conjugal love affairs. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as world acharya, he wanted to teach them a good lesson. They would walk barefoot wherever they went. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur drove up in a British-made Jaguar automobile. They were shocked. And then he came out, and he was wearing a coat. They were shocked. What is this? But they knew he was a great scholar and a great Vaishnava, so they all gathered around to hear the subject of the Rasika platform of the conjugal love affairs of Radha and Krishna. And he spoke for 1 month on the philosophy of the Upanishads. Because he wanted to expose these people. In fact, he didn't take Paramhamsa Sannyas, which was the tradition in Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya. He accepted Sannyas, Tridandi Sannyas. And our beloved Srila Prabhupada explains why he accepted this Tridandi Sannyas. Because there were so many people artificially trying to be Paramhamsas. Babaji initiation is for those who are completely on the self-realized platform of prema bhakti. It's the Paramhamsa stage. After going through Bahudak, Kutichak, Parivrajakacharya, the three preliminary stages of sannyas, when one is thoroughly self-realized, then one takes to the dress of a paramhamsa. But he saw there were people, paramhamsas, who were getting the worship of the people in general, who were smoking bidis. Prabhupada said in one lecture, he said, just like you have seen in Gopinath Bazaar in Vrindavan, he said, not only are the Paramhamsa Babajis, not only are they smoking bidis, but they're manufacturing bidis to make money to smoke more bidis. And many were having illicit connections with the opposite sex. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to establish this Tridanti Sannyas within Gaudiya Vaishnavism as an act of humility. Paramhamsa means you're above Varnashram Dharma. You're above the regulative principles. Tridanti Sannyas means you have to strictly follow the regulative principles of your ashram, of Varnashram. And also he was thinking that Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, my Diksha Guru, and Thakur Bhakti Vinod, my Shiksha Guru, they were both Paramhamsa Babajis. And I should never try to imitate or put myself on their level. Let me be their humble servant by taking Tridanti Sannyas. To teach the world. He wanted to establish Daivi Varnashram. Not to artificially give up the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma for one's own materialistic, egoistic purposes, but rather to follow the Varnashram system for the exclusive purpose of serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Atapum bir dvijastreshtas varnashram vibhagasha svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritoshanam. The perfection of following our varna or ashram is simply to please Krishna. If Krishna is pleased by the performance of our occupation, then our life is perfect. If Krishna is not pleased, then whatever we may accomplish within this world in the eyes of mortal people, we have failed miserably. We have wasted the human form of life. Nayam deho deha bhajam naloke kastan kaman arhati vibhujam jay. The dogs and the hogs that eat stool, they get all kinds of arrangements for sense gratification. Sense gratification, material security, is not the purpose of life. Self-realization, to realize one's identity as the eternal servant of the Lord, that is the only real purpose of life. And every moment, in whatever we do, that should be our goal. To please Krishna. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, he perfectly taught the world this principle of Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He engaged various types of people in various ways, not only to purify their own hearts, but to spread the mission of compassion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the whole world. Today I have been asked by my beloved godbrother Bhima Prabhu, my dear friends Brajahari Prabhu and Devaki Nandan Prabhu, Suradas Prabhu, Rasraj Prabhu, Maharaji, to speak on one particular person who Srila Prabhupada taught the entire human society through his activities. Recently, one of the very dear, beloved associates of Srila Prabhupada has left this world by the arrangement of Lord Krishna. Without a doubt, this person was the most influential and famous man that was ever an integral part of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. When this person became a devotee, he made such a massive impact in the culture of the world in the spirit of bhakti. In the 1960s, there was a counterculture revolution taking place throughout the Western world. And more than anyone else in the whole society, there were four men that were the greatest influence on everybody's life. Most famous men in the world. It was a musical band called the Beatles. It's very impossible to try to get you people of India to understand the impact of the Beatles in Western society. They conquered the culture. In 1964, when they first came to America from Liverpool in England, already their fame and their glories were being sung everywhere. There was such an incredible expectation. Their first public performance in America was on the number one television show called The Ed Sullivan Show. It was a family show that played every Sunday night. And practically the whole of America, the families would sit together to watch The Ed Sullivan Show. There was something for everyone. When the Beatles came on, I wish the Atma series could someday make such an impact on the world. When they came on, the people in the audience, it was shocking. America never saw such a thing. They were playing their drums and their guitars and singing, and there were hundreds of women who were weeping and crying, falling unconscious to see them, screaming at the top of their lungs, not just out of some artificial screaming. It was like spontaneous attraction. That television show changed the history of America. Practically every song they ever sang was number one, selling millions of records. When they would do live performances, they just didn't play in nightclubs or in pubs or in even concert halls. There wasn't enough space. They would play in gigantic stadiums where 50, 60, 100,000 people could fit. And when it was announced where they would play, every ticket would be sold in one day. They would be sold out after one day, 60,000 people. And wherever they went, they had to actually be underground just because they were so popular. It was a harassment. If anybody saw them, immediately there would be thousands of people gathered around them screaming and crying. Literally, we have seen film footage. We've even seen it with our own eyes. When they would come, people would be hysterical. Especially women, but even men. They would be jumping, they would be crying, their hairs would be standing on end, they would be falling unconscious, foaming at the mouth. They had to have ambulances wherever the Beatles were just to pick up people who just fell unconscious. It sounds like ecstatic symptoms. That's how attractive they were. They were emotional ecstatic symptoms. It wasn't ecstasy coming from the soul, but it certainly was some sort of exhilarating joy and attachment coming from the mind and the body. It's the power they had on people. It's unbelievable. Whatever they did, in their lives became the standard for society, for the young generation in society. I remember my parents, they couldn't believe, you know, who are these people? They didn't like their music. They were thinking, why is everybody trying to be like them? They cut their hair in a certain way. Tens and millions of people cut their hair just like that. Yes, Bhima Prabhu? Radhakumar? Am I exaggerating? You'll never understand this. Unless you realize that and experience that, you can't really taste the nectar of what we're talking about. They would put on a certain type of dress that became the fashion for the whole young generation in the world. They would wear a certain type of shoes. Whoever manufactured their shoes had to manufacture tens and millions of shoes like that to sell it. Whatever they did. And then they changed. They would change their hairstyle from this to this. Then everybody's like this. And everywhere you go on every radio station, there's simply the music of the Beatles. It was all pervading. They were deep-thinking people. They were sincerely striving, not only for money and profession, but for higher consciousness. When they started experimenting with psychedelic drugs, it became the fashion of the entire Western world, young generation, to take LSD, marijuana, and these other types of drugs. When they started singing about revolution against the materialistic norms of society, then the whole young generation followed them in their revolution against the norms, questioning authority. Powerful. In fact, one of the Beatles, John Lennon, he spoke something which was completely truthful, but he said it in a spirit of sadness. Because on Sunday, when people go to church, the Christians, there might be a couple hundred people in church. But when the Beatles play in town on a Sunday, there's 100,000 people to come to see him. Just to show the degradation of society, he actually said, it was actually in a critical way of the people, he said, the Beatles are more popular than Jesus Christ. More people were listening to their records than reading the Bible and going to church. More people were influencing their lives and the culture on the basis of what they were singing and what they were saying than any of the religions of the Western world. This is the power of these men. One of the Beatles, who was very quiet, very humble, liked to stay in the background, although he was always in the foreground. He was very deeply spiritually oriented. And seeking higher consciousness, he took to this transcendental meditation. And he dragged all the other Beatles to Rishikesh to study meditation. And when he did this, tens and millions of people all over the world started meditating. Can you imagine? Yes, Bhima Prabhu? Did you ever meditate? See? Radhakun Prabhu? Everyone. The Beatles meditate. Everyone has to meditate. But then they were a little bit discouraged by what they saw in that situation, and they were looking for something more. In 1967, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada came to San Francisco, and with the help of his beloved disciples, they started the second temple of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. on Frederick Street, the place where Rasaraj Prabhu is preaching so much these days in San Francisco. There were especially three Grihastha couples who were so very, very surrendered to Srila Prabhupada. Mukunda Goswami, at that time, he was married to Janaki. Gurudas Prabhu and Jamuna Mataji. And Shamsundar Prabhu and Malati Mataji. Prabhupada saw in them that they were so willing, so eager to do anything for him. He understood that he can empower them to do great things. To be empowered to be a preacher is not a matter of having a good intellect or being a good speaker. It's a question of how much we're surrendered to the spiritual master and the previous acharyas, and willing to fearlessly do anything they ask. Srila Prabhupada called them to Montreal, one of the first beginning temples of our society. And there he instructed them to go to London. This was historical. Because you know, India was subjugated by the British rule for what, 2 centuries? Srila Prabhupada told us the whole India was educated that London was the center of the universe. And everything is auspicious only in its relationship with London. When Srila Prabhupada came to London years later, he said, when I was a boy in school, we were always hearing the glories of London. The mighty River Thames, it was called. So he wanted to see this mighty River Thames. And when he saw it, he was very disappointed. He said, we were always educated that the greatest of all rivers in the world is the mighty River Thames, but I see it's just a dirty little trickle. But this was the promotion. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent some of his top preachers, most surrendered associates, to London to start a temple. But it was very difficult. They didn't have too much success. Srila Prabhupada sent these 6 Grihastha devotees to London to start a temple. Shamsundar Prabhu was very, very creative. How much he loved Prabhupada. He just wanted to do something wonderful for Prabhupada. He had such faith in Srila Prabhupada that he was thinking that by Prabhupada's mercy, anything can happen. Now for America, in our generation in the 60s, the only thing we really knew about London was that is the home of the Beatles. Yes, we really didn't know that much about London, but we knew that is the place of the Beatles, England. So Shamsundar Prabhu was thinking, if the Beatles become devotees, they can have a major impact on the whole world. That was his prayer. Prabhupada, Krishna, help me make the Beatles devotees. That's the most impossible proposition one could possibly have. The Beatles were under such tight security, you couldn't get near them. When they would go out in public, hundreds of people would literally jump on them. They wanted some prasad. They didn't call it prasad, but they wanted remnants. People would pull their hair out just to get the Beatles' hair. They would rip their clothes off just to get a little shred of the Beatles' clothes. George Harrison tells the story. Once he was in a restaurant, and he took a bite out of a sandwich and put it back, and this girl ran by and grabbed the sandwich. Just to get his remnants. She probably ate a little, then she shared some with her friends, and she probably still has it in her freezer somewhere. So they were under such immensely tight security to protect them from the millions of people who wanted to see them, to touch them, to exploit them according to their desires. So one time the Beatles were having some sort of a conference, like a meeting of very important people. Some of the most influential men in the world were coming to this conference. In the young generation, the leader of the Hell's Angels, the president, what is it, Kenneth Kesey? He was there, the magic bus, what? So some of these people were there, and somehow or other, Shamsundar, because he knew some of the people, he somehow or other got in there. And when he got in, there were hundreds of people. And by material standards, they were all there just to get darshan of the Beatles. Just to see them. The Beatles came out, and all these most prominent people in society were there, and they spoke a few words, and then they left. And everyone just were so thrilled, feeling themselves so fortunate that they actually personally saw the Beatles. So the Beatles left. But then George Harrison, he came back into the room and walked directly to where Shamsundar was standing. Shamsundar Prabhu was the only person who wasn't a famous person in the world that was in that assembly. He was just way back in the corner. George Harrison came right to where he was standing. And with such eagerness and joyfulness, he said, "Where have you been? Where have you been? I've been looking everywhere for you." Shamsundar Prabhu was very much startled. What does he mean? Then George Harrison explained that he had a record of Srila Prabhupada chanting, the Happening album. This Happening album was recorded in 1966 when Prabhupada was living on 22nd Avenue. Somehow or other, George Harrison got hold of that record. It gave him such spiritual enlightenment, he played the record over and over and over and over again. He told Shamsundar that I played the record so many times that the grooves of the record have run down. Have anybody ever played a record so many times that the grooves become worn out? That's how much he loved to hear Prabhupada sing. Now this man is the most famous professional expert musician in the planet. And he's listening to Prabhupada's music, thinking it's the highest music he had ever experienced. It enlightened his heart. He asked Shamsundar, "I want another record. Please tell me where I can get another record of your Guru Maharaj." Shamsundar Prabhu made friends with him, got him another record. George Harrison invited Shamsundar Prabhu to his house. Malati prepared wonderful prasad. Shamsundar Prabhu and Mukunda Maharaj, they would regularly go to the house of George Harrison and give him prasad and preach to him. They taught him how to chant. They told him everything about Srila Prabhupada. He became a devotee. And being such a famous person, he wanted to help the devotees. He wanted to be the servant of the servant of Srila Prabhupada. Now, when you're that famous, the whole world is watching you. 24 hours a day, you're like under a microscope. The press,
anything he would say, anything he would do would become international news if he just became a little public about it. So he wanted to use his reputation to help the devotees. The devotees were in total poverty. They didn't even have a place to stay in London. They all had to spread out and live in different places, and then they would meet together and figure out how to somehow or other fulfill Prabhupada's desire to make London Krishna conscious. Malati explains at one time she and her baby Saraswati and her husband Shyam Sundar, because they had nowhere to live, they lived in the basement of a warehouse, and their bedroom was a cardboard box for refrigerators or something. That's how simple they were living. George Harrison wanted to help them. He loved their chanting. So what he did is he invited them to record a record on the most famous record label in the world, Apple Records. It was the Beatles' own personal record company. Anything with the Apple Records is going to sell by the millions because of its connection to the Beatles. He wanted just the devotees to come and chant the holy names, and he wanted to produce and promote the record. They went to the Apple Record Studios. The most famous bands in the world were standing in line to get in that studio to record, but they couldn't. But here was just the devotees with their mrdangas and kartals and harmonium. For this record, George Harrison engaged the other Beatles to help out. John Lennon was giving advice. Paul McCartney, one of the lead singers, and his wife, they were at the controls doing the mixing. Actually, he had them just doing humble service for the devotees. The biggest people in the world are just doing humble service, facilitating the singing of the devotees. George Harrison personally played his famous guitar in the album, produced the songs. The devotees wrote them and sang them, and he just was there helping. The way he put that record together of the devotees singing, and the way he promoted it, when music was the very heart of culture in the 1960s. That record, the Radha Krishna album, the Radha Krishna Temple, became the number one record album in all of Europe. Best selling. And the number one single records on the charts was the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra sung by Srila Prabhupada's devotees. Previous to this, the devotees were just, you know, singing on the streets and meeting a few people here and there and distributing some back to Godheads. But at this point now, the devotees actually became famous. They were invited to concert halls to perform. And because their record, the Hare Krishna Mantra, was number one, even some of the most famous big bands of the time, they were the warm-up band for the Radha Krishna Temple. They had the number one record. If you go to Vrindavan, you'll meet Dhananjay Prabhu. He'll tell you. And Shyam Sundar Prabhu is coming to Bombay this evening. You can discuss with him. When they were traveling around, they were on television, the most popular television show in all of the UK. It was called Top of the Pops. They were repeatedly brought back there to just sit with harmoniums and tamburas and kartals and mridangas and chant Hare Krishna. Millions of people. And everyone knew they were connected to the Beatles. George Harrison was the first prominent, famous person to take interest in Krishna consciousness. And he used his influence to have an impact all over the world. Actually, George Harrison was so sympathetic and so favorable that he arranged the record in such a way that the devotees would get all the profits, not so much coming to Apple Records. The devotees wanted a temple. George Harrison was the main person to help fund the first temple in London on Berry Place. But just before that time, the devotees were famous all over Europe as musicians and philosophers. They invited Srila Prabhupada to come. But they had no place to put Prabhupada. There was no temple. They didn't even have a house to live in. So they expressed to George Harrison, and he spoke to one of them, the founder of the Beatles band. His name was John Lennon. And John Lennon, by George Harrison's influence, he also became very favorable to Krishna consciousness. In fact, before they even met devotees, just by listening to Prabhupada's record, The Happening, John Lennon and George Harrison, they once went on a boat together. And they sang the Hare Krishna mantra together the entire day. And John Lennon and George Harrison said, the more we chanted, the more we wanted to chant. It was the most spiritual experience they ever had in their lives. Prabhupada was invited to live with his devotees in the mansion of John Lennon. It was there that Srila Prabhupada met George Harrison. All the Beatles would come to hear from Srila Prabhupada, but Prabhupada saw in George Harrison something unique. He was genuinely searching for the spiritual goal of life. He became so very, very dear to Srila Prabhupada. He actually became Prabhupada's disciple in his heart of hearts. I want to tell you a particular service he rendered, which will go down in religious history as one of the most monumental contributions a human being has ever made in the service of God. Let the bells ring to honor this glorious offering of George Harrison. Srila Prabhupada's life work was to translate Srimad Bhagavatam. He began his mission of coming to the West when he was 70 years old. At that time, he only had 3 volumes, which comprised the first of 12 cantos complete. He was preaching, he was managing, he was organizing, he was traveling. The only time really he had to translate was in the middle of the night when everyone was sleeping. Prabhupada writes in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita in one purport that he didn't know how much longer he would live. He already had 4 heart attacks, paralysis. He was in ill health. He was traveling and giving his life and soul and compassion to others.
out of his causeless mercy, he decided that in case Krishna doesn't give him the time to live to complete the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, he wanted to write the summary study of the 10th canto, the crest jewel essence of the whole Bhagavatam, describing Krishna's personal leela in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. He wanted the world to have that in the English language. So Srila Prabhupada worked for months and months and months and months to compile the Krishna book. But at that time, there was only a few centers in the world, and there was no money, no funds. Even the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, at that time, there was no books. At the most Prabhupada could do, this was even in the 70s, he would write a chapter and they would just print a very cheap little paperback volume of each chapter, The Lord and the Heart. You remember? They didn't have the funds for the books. So here was Krishna book, complete, years of effort of Srila Prabhupada to translate it. But there were no money. So one day, he was meeting with Shamsundar Prabhu. And he told Shamsundar Prabhu, you should request George to fund the publishing of this book. Shamsundar Prabhu really didn't want to do that. He never asked George for anything. If George was inspired on his own, he would help in certain ways. But you see, rich people like the Beatles, so many people come to them for money because they were multi-millionaires. Sometimes wealthy people, this is their great anxiety in life. They don't know who really likes them and who just wants their money. So one of the reasons Shamsundar became practically the very best friend of George Harrison is because he just loved him for who he was. And he was trying to give him Krishna simply out of love. He wasn't asking anything in return. So he expressed to Srila Prabhupada that I think it'll ruin our relationship with George if I ask him for such a large sum of money. Srila Prabhupada said, no, you should ask him. And Shamsundar in so many ways was trying to explain to Prabhupada how this is very dangerous. Our whole relationship with George and the Beatles can be destroyed if they see that we want their money. Prabhupada said, no, it's all right. He's a nice boy. You ask him. It was the order of his spiritual master on his head. So he was at George Harrison's house. It was just the two of them sitting at a table. And they were discussing so many subjects, discussing Krishna. And Shamsundar Prabhu was just thinking, how am I going to ask him this question without him being very upset with me? He was trying to do it in a very delicate, sensitive, roundabout way. And then finally he somehow said that, Prabhupada has wrote this book, Krishna, Krishna's Leela, his pastimes. It was so hard for him to get these words out, but it was Prabhupada's order. He said, Srila Prabhupada wants you to help to print this book. As soon as he said it, George became very grave. He was just about to say, so you want my money? He was upset. But just before the first word came out of his mouth, a miracle took place. There was tumultuous lightning bolt that struck his house. It caused all the electricity to go out, and it was night. It was total darkness. And then another. They were both sitting there in the total darkness. Silent. Then the lights went on. And George looked at Shyam Sundar Prabhu and said, "How could I refuse that?" So he gave all the money. And I would like to read Srila Prabhupada's appreciation of him. Please take note. Prabhupada said that his books were the very foundation, the basis of our Krishna consciousness movement for tens and thousands of years. Srila Prabhupada wrote this about George Harrison. "My grateful acknowledgement is due to Sriman George Harrison, who is now chanting Hare Krishna, for his liberal contribution of $19,000 to meet the entire cost of printing this volume. May Krishna bestow upon this nice boy further advancement in Krishna consciousness." In 1970, this was in 1969-70, $19,000 was equal to about $500,000 today. Was it not? It was a major donation. I remember in 1970, the average standard of living for Americans, the wealthiest country in the world, was $9,000 to $10,000 a year. That was the middle class. He gave twice the annual salary of the American working people. Large donation. But George Harrison also wanted to utilize his name and influence specifically to make people Krishna conscious and to read Srila Prabhupada's books. Krishna book was the best-selling book of Srila Prabhupada at that time. Devotees all over the Western world, that was their main thing, distributing Krishna book. Do you know why? Because it was so easy to sell. Because George Harrison, in the introduction to the book, is appealing to people to buy the book. It's a fact. This was the way devotees sold the book. They would just meet people on the street and say, "Do you like George Harrison and the Beatles?" Everybody would say, "Yes." "You have something?" They say, "Yes." And they would just open up and show the message of George Harrison. When they would see George Harrison is praising Krishna, praising Prabhupada, and asking people to read the book, they would buy the book. It was the most popular thing they could do. Please read this message that George Harrison wrote, and it's still being printed by Prabhupada's desire as the foreword to the Krishna book. So historical. Have any of us, did Prabhupada use our names to sell his books? What an intimate service he's rendered. And listen to his profound understanding of our philosophy. Words from George Harrison. This is George Harrison speaking. "Everybody is looking for Krishna. Some don't realize that they are, but they are. Krishna is God, the source of all that exists, the cause of all that is, was, or ever will be. As God is unlimited, he has many names. Allah, Buddha, Jehovah, Rama, all are Krishna. All are one. God is not abstract. He has both the impersonal and the personal aspects to his personality, which is supreme, eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. as a single drop of water has the same qualities as an ocean of water, so has our consciousness the qualities of God's consciousness. But through our identification and attachment with material energy, physical body, sense pleasures, material possessions, ego, etc., our true transcendental consciousness has been polluted like a dirty mirror. It is unable to reflect a pure image. He's giving the world, in essence, a Chintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. With many lives, our association with the temporary has grown. This impermanent body, a bag of bones and flesh, is mistaken for our true self, and we have accepted this temporary condition to be final. Through all ages, great saints have remained as living proof that this non-temporary, permanent state of God consciousness can be revived in all living souls. He's saying revived. That our original natural consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Krishna said, each soul is potentially divine. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, steady in the self, being freed from all material contamination, the yogi achieves the highest perfectional stage of happiness in touch with the supreme consciousness. Yoga, a scientific method for God or self-realization, is the process by which we purify our consciousness, stop further pollution, and arrive at the state of perfection, full knowledge, full bliss. If there is a God, I want to see him. It is pointless to believe in something without proof. And Krishna consciousness and meditation are methods where you can actually obtain God perception. You can actually see God and hear him, play with him. It might sound crazy, but he is actually there, actually with you. There are many yogic paths: Raja, Jnana, Hatha, Kriya, Karma, Bhakti, which are all acclaimed by the masters of each method. Swami Bhaktivedanta is, as his title says, a bhakti yogi, following the path of devotion. By serving God through each thought, word, and deed, and by chanting his holy names, the devotee quickly develops God consciousness. By chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, one inevitably arrives at Krishna consciousness. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. I request that you take advantage of this book, Krishna, and enter into its understanding. I also request that you make an appointment to meet your God now through the self-liberating process of yoga, union, and give peace a chance. All you need is love, Krishna. Hari Bol, George Harrison. For such a famous man to put his reputation and everything in his life on the line to serve Prabhupada, because that's very controversial. But that was his love. And how Srila Prabhupada reciprocated by blessing him. Krishna book was published by the donation of George Harrison, and it was distributed in mass quantity by the loving message that he spoke. That was in 1970. In 1971, George Harrison came to India, and along with Ravi Shankar, he came to Vrindavan. Especially wanted to visit the holy places of Krishna's Leela. In fact, when I was living in Vrindavan, there was no ISKCON there at the time. I was living on Bank of Jamuna. And there were some very, very wonderful sadhus who I was with a lot. We would just travel to the different holy places together. And because of my visa, I had to leave. And people told me, you go to New Vrindavan if you have to leave Vrindavan. That was what the Vrijavasis told me. Because Bhaktivedanta Swami said that New Vrindavan is non-different than Vrindavan, so you should go there, but always remain in Vrindavan. This was their message. So when I was there, I got a letter. Just a couple months after I left, just weeks after I left, they told me that George Harrison and Ravi Shankar came to Vrindavan and approached them to take them all around on parikrama. Said, if you were here, you could have come. Haribo. Anyways, the influence of his Vrindavan trip, they told me that they taught him the song. This is my friends, the Vrijavasis. They told me that they taught George Harrison the song, Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. And he was so moved that later on I was told that he actually put that in one of his top-selling number one records albums, where he sings Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. He loved Vrindavan. At that time in 1971, or actually 72, I believe it was actually, he came to Vrindavan in 72, I'm sorry. There was a massive flood in Bangladesh. Millions of people were homeless and starving. Due to his love for India, he established, for the first time in history, a major event amongst rock and roll stars to raise funds for suffering people. It has been repeated many, many times by the most famous people in the world, but he was the person who inaugurated and established this type of charitable playing for charity. In the most prestigious concert hall in the entire United States, Madison Square Garden in downtown New York City, he had a benefit concert for the people who were suffering in Bangladesh. And he had some of the top musicians and entertainers in the world come to perform for free by his influence. And they gave large sum of money, hundreds and thousands of dollars, to help the people of India. He considered India his spiritual home. His main message to the world was that money and fame can never bring you happiness. I have all money and all fame, but it's artificial, it's superficial, and it's ignorance to try to be happy through money and fame. The only way to be happy is to know God and to love God. This was his repeated message in the newspapers and press conferences everywhere to the world. One time Srila Prabhupada came to the small temple in Berry Place near the British Museum in London, which George Harrison personally helped to finance. And he even got some of the most famous musicians and entertainers in the world to actually help give donations. He engaged them in Krishna service. Rolling Stones and people like that actually were giving donations to Krishna to help the devotees. Prabhupada was once there, and the temple was so overcrowded. There were people sleeping on the stairs, sleeping in the hallways, sleeping in the temple room, sleeping in the prasadam room, sleeping everywhere. And Prabhupada felt such compassion that these young boys and girls, They're giving up their whole lives to assist me in the service of my Guru Maharaj, and they don't even have a proper place to sleep. So he asked the leaders of the temple to get a bigger place. But they had no money and no means. It was then that George Harrison came forward again. He said to the devotees, "I will purchase a center for you." Dhananjay Prabhu, he was one of the people in charge of looking for different places. In a suburb of London called Watford, that district, they found a beautiful estate, I think about 20 acres of land, and a beautiful mansion with so many rooms and big halls, but it cost a fortune. They presented it to George Harrison, and with his own money, he purchased the entire Bhaktivedanta Manor and made an offering to Srila Prabhupada. Largest donation our movement has ever gotten. Srila Prabhupada loved Bhaktivedanta Manor. He made it the headquarters of the Hare Krishna movement for all of Europe. He would sometimes spend months at a time at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Just yesterday, Shyam Sundar Prabhu called me, and I quoted what Bhima Prabhu told me, that Prabhupada has three favorite places in the world. Can you tell them what it is? His garden in Los Angeles, his rooms in Vrindavan, and Juhu Beach. See, Bhima Prabhu, he speaks with realization. So I told that to help attract Shyam Sundar Prabhu to come to Bombay. And he laughed and he said, "Prabhupada said different things according to the people he was talking to." He said, "But he always told me his favorite place was Bhaktivedanta Manor." He gave hundreds of people initiations in Bhaktivedanta Manor. He translated volumes of his books in Bhaktivedanta Manor. He preached to all classes of society in Bhaktivedanta Manor. And to this day, Bhaktivedanta Manor is the most vibrant temple in all of the European continent and subcontinents. George Harrison, he came forward in a press conference and he spoke to the press. They asked him about his life and what he's doing. And he told them all a story. And this came out on the news everywhere. He said he was driving from France to Portugal. It was a 23-hour drive. He said from the beginning to the end, he was all alone in the car. He was just loudly chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He said he became so intoxicated with spiritual bliss that he forgot he was even driving. He didn't even know what direction he was going in. He was just chanting and chanting and chanting. And 23 hours later, somehow or other, he arrived in his destination and he was still loudly chanting the holy names of Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. He actually had a taste for chanting by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. He would come and visit Srila Prabhupada on a regular basis, ask questions, offer various services. He became one of Prabhupada's very, very dear associates. There was talk about him shaving his head and joining the temple. Prabhupada told him that you should remain as you are. This was the instruction of Srila Prabhupada to him. He said, you should remain as you are, as a musician. And through your fame and through your music, try to influence people to serve Krishna and chant his holy names. Sriman George Harrison took that order as his life and soul. His next record album was Living in the Material World. He also made an album called All Things Must Pass. And in it, he's simply speaking the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. In fact, that album, Living in the Material World, the cover was identical to the cover of Bhagavad Gita of Srila Prabhupada. That painting of Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot with the horses, he made that the cover of his record. And how that sold Bhagavad Gita's. People would just see the cover of Bhagavad Gita and say, this is George Harrison. Because everyone knew his record. They would buy it. Haribo. And he was talking about the futility of material life and the great need of Krishna consciousness. He wrote one song called My Sweet Lord, which was the number one song in the Western world